The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, board, volunteers, or underwriters.
That's right.
Yeah, everybody's got a different opinion.
Well, I really like this music in the background here. I'm sad to turn it off. There's like 15 minutes left in this song here. The Robert Glasper Experiment.
Yeah, you know much about them?
With Roy, doing a tribute to Roy Ayers.
Sounds good.
None have heard of them, but it's great. And thanks to Dane for a great melodic flow show there.
Yeah, that's what he usually does.
I'm going to have to turn it off because we got a show to do. Okay, well, welcome back to the studio here, Jonathan.
Hey, thank you. And I just want to say thanks to all the listeners and all the hardworking staff and volunteers at KKCR. It's really nice to come back to the station and have there be a station here. And, this is a great community resource, KKCR, that's for sure.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's see. For those who don't know, you've been gone for a couple of months now here, running for KIUC board.
Well, I wasn't exactly running. I was more standing.
Standing?
Yeah.
You threw your hat in the ring.
I did.
And let it all happen. But you were not elected.
Nope, again, the second time.
And who was elected were three incumbents.
Yeah, they've been there for eight or 9 years now.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's who we have to work with here. I was hoping for some change there, but we've got the same good old boys back on the board.
I wish them the best of luck dealing with the energy challenges that our island faces, because they're going to need it. And, I encourage everyone, or I would wish that as many people as possible can support them to get the right things done, because they're the ones who are there and that's what needs to happen.
But I would assume that we'll get more of the same. I was hoping there would be some change of an attitude there. Maybe they have seen the light. I don't know if the input that the community has been giving them over the last several months or so has changed their outlook on the running of the KIC, the utility, or if they will just continue to do things as they have. We don't need to get into the details of what exactly my criticisms are of them, but it'll be more of the same, I'm sure.
Well, one thing that that I learned, trying to interact with KIC over the last, 5-6 months, whatever, is that they are pretty clear about what they want to do and how they want to do it, and they were quite vigorous in defending their position and the direction they want to move things in.
Well, it's not the direction, I guess.
Well, the style, so direction, it's those things and more.
The way, the process that they go through in making decisions is what a lot of people were critical of, not including the community in their discussions. I mean, we don't hear about anything until it's a done deal, basically.
I think that the KIC will probably be more proactive in telling the community what they're going to do or what they're doing. Massaging that message. I think they're going to put more energy into that.
Well, I would like to see them put energy into trying to find out what we would like them to do.
I don't think you're going to see that.
But that's the idea of a co-op, right?
A funny thing happened.
on the way to a co-op.
On the way to the co-op, yeah. The whole rural electrical cooperatives were started, back under FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, back in the 1930s. And the political conditions and the philosophy of the people at that time and stuff is very different from the world that we're living in today. They wanted to do that to help rural communities get electrified, get electrification, get electricity, so that they could, join the rest of the economy, I guess. And so at that time, it was sort of a more socialistic, attitude or approach to trying to get stuff done, since Wall Street had demonstrated its what, you know,
lack of concern.
Yeah, lack of concern with the whole Wall Street collapse, and it was a massive social dislocation. And so they were trying different ways to try and, you know, spark development and include more people in society. But, you know, that was a long time ago. And in the last 70 years or so, our country has become a lot more corporate and, you know, kind of a more of a resurgence of capitalist ideology. So, you know, having the dollars and cents of it be the determining factors, and whoever has the dollars and cents gets to make the determination.
Right.
So I think from what I learned is the way that the people at KIUC understand what a utility cooperative is a slightly different business model, where they have access to low cost capital. They can borrow large sums of money at low interest that allows them to have a slightly nuanced business model, but they're still a corporate structure. They still have a CEO and staff, and they still make all their decisions from the top down. And rather than the board of directors serving as a mechanism or a means by which the community could have input into the co-op, my observation is that the function of the board is to be an insulator for management from the community, so they can continue to operate as the business that they are.
Right, which is counter to their proclamations on their website, their co-op principles, you know, their guiding principles. But, you know, we had a caller called in last show who informed me, and I wasn't aware of this, that out of the whatever several hundred co-ops there are in the country.
Yeah, it's almost 1,000, 900 and something.
Ours is like the only one, or one of very few, that actually generates our own electricity.
Well, KIUC, and I hope we won't spend the whole time talking about KIUC.
No. But you're just back here now from the campaign trail, so we don't want to know what you learned while you were gone.
Well, there's three major components to electrical business. There's generation of power, transmission of power over distance, and then distribution of power to individual, you know, power users. And KIC is rare in that they do all three of those things. Most co-ops don't generate their own power.
They just buy electricity from the grid. Distribute it.
Right. Typically, they're just distributors, or they're just they just do transmission, or sometimes both. But yeah, KIC, because our grid is an island. It's islanded. Yeah. We're not attached to anybody. If it isn't done here, it doesn't get done. So they do all three of those things.
Right. So a point or a question I asked then was, is a co-op really the right model for us to for our utility here? I mean, because why have a co-op that has all these requirements of community input when we really don't have any say? I mean, we don't have any... anything to add? I mean, unless we just happen to have some utility people in the community, you know, who know how to run it and have expertise that they need, you know, what do I know about running a co-op? You know, why do I own a co-op if I don't know how to run one? You know what I mean?
Well, like I say,
maybe it's not the right model. Maybe there should be, you know, municipal-owned utility, or we should have sold it to somebody else, and maybe we still can get our money back.
Well, I think the thing that's groovy about utility co-ops from their perspective, like I said a minute ago, is they have access to low-cost capital. They can borrow large sums of money at incredibly low interest rates because they are utility cooperatives, because all these mechanisms were set up back in the 30s that we inherited. But I think that's really the only difference, as far as what I can tell, as far as what I can see, as far as what I saw, what I learned.
Yeah.
And, you know, different people have different experiences and different perspectives, and maybe they'll tell you something different, but that's how I understand it. So, you know, when Citizens Electric, or Kauai Electric, Citizens Utilities, when they were trying to get out of this market, having access to that low-cost capital allowed the community here to gather the resources necessary to make a purchase of it. And I think it's purely business. You know, if it had been some other mechanism, they would have done that. But, you know, calling it a co-op gave them access to low-cost capital.
Yeah.
Cheap, big money.
But it does, I mean, it put us on the hook for all that money that they borrowed, but, you know, we get nothing out of it. We have no say in the running of it.
Nope.
Except for the election of board members.
Which, you know, having tried to do it twice is not a very easy thing to do. You need to have resources to do that. You need to have, you know, political organization. I'm not like a big organization man.
Yeah.
I'm not drawn to that. I'm not really interested in pursuing personal power, so I haven't really been motivated to do those things. But that's kind of what you need. You need to be able to get in touch with 3,000 or 4,000 people and have them all, you know, punch your name on the ballot. And if you can't do that, then you won't get elected. And the people who are able to do that typically have been in the community for a long time, generations. The people who got elected are pillars of the community, have been here for generations, you know, served in Vietnam or are decorated vets, owners of corporations of their own. You know, these are major players in the community. So it's not surprising that they, through their personal networks, could keep themselves in office.
Right. But does that serve us well? That's my question.
You know, yes, you know, Dave, I don't like all these questions that you're asking.
Tough questions.
Yeah.
Okay, we have a call. Let's go to the phones. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Yes, aloha, Dave and Jonathan.
Hey, aloha.
Thank you so much, Jonathan, for your good faith efforts.
Mm. Well, you know, I tried to articulate some ideas. I tried to bring some different perspectives into the conversation. I don't know where that's going to go, but I did it, and maybe there was benefit to it, and I guess we'll just have to see.
Well, maybe by getting the information out through all these sources, and hopefully people are watching, like myself, on the Government Access Channel 54, some of the information regarding the smart meters. And that's my question, gentlemen. Specifically, Jonathan, I applied to get a safe meter, a non-standard meter.
Sure, old school analog.
And then I was listening to, I guess, Felicia's program, and a gentleman called in and said, well, 6 months ago he applied, and then he kept on calling and asking, well, where is it? And they lost his form.
Right,
or...
right. They don't have any interest in facilitating people to not have smart meters.
I mean, so the first question I have is, do you think eventually will I be able to get a non-standard meter?
I think if you're really dogged about it and don't give up, eventually you'll be able to get what you want there. But you're going to have some resistance from KIUC because, you know, these smart meters are enhanced billing devices, and KIUC wants to have enhanced billing devices to increase their ability to bill you. I mean, like with smart meters, they can turn them on and off remotely. So if you get behind in your bill, they can just push a button and your power goes off.
I'm glad you mentioned that after listening to the lady who was the scientist at Lucent who made the nice presentation showing the tremendous difference between background radiation and the spikes in our smart meters. One thing she recommended, which I could do immediately, I'm working on the other things she suggested. So what I've been doing is every second I don't need the electricity, I turn it off.
Well, that's a really good idea, and that's one of the things I learned through running, trying to engage with KIC as an institution. You know, if you don't have the resources to sit down and be effective in that discussion, it's kind of not worth your while in a way. So it makes sense to turn your energy, if you will, to more productive directions. And, you know, I'm going to try and build up my own energy independence since KIC doesn't seem to want to do that for the island as a whole. So I would just encourage you and other people to use as little electricity as possible.
Well, about 2 months ago, I turned my refrigerator freezer down to the lowest possible setting of cold, and my electricity dropped from an average of $48 a month to $38 a month for 2 months running. So I thought, well, this is a good step. And then I know about, how refrigerators work. And so if I don't have any food to put in there to stuff the spaces, I put in like canned goods and plastic bags so that the density of these objects will retain the cold.
Sure. You're reducing the volume too.
Yeah. And so I'm hoping to maybe get my electricity down into the $20 range. And then I'm going to be buying one of these mini harmonizers, and then I'm going to be saving my money because I've been researching on the web how to, how a mosquito net works. I discovered that I can buy for, say, $1,100, like a Faraday type of mosquito netting. Basically it will go over my bed and it will...
What does that do?
What that does, it like blocks almost all... Or the majority, just imagine a mosquito net. Well, you can hang one over your bed. You can even have a little, like if you watch these spy movies, you'll see many times the good guy or bad guy is in a cage. It's called a Faraday cage.
Does that like concentrate orgone energy or something? What does that do?
It does the opposite. It nominalizes, it minimizes the effects of electromagnetic radiation. And so when like the government is trying to like, I forgot what movie it was where Gene Hackman was in this Faraday cage and he was working, he used to be a spook and now, so the government could not like mess with his electronics and his internet and all his communication devices. I didn't understand it at the time, but in the movie it showed him took this individual who is his buddy into this Faraday cage. And so I'm going to have to research the work of the scientist Michael Faraday.
Is that like a cone of silence?
Yeah, like cone of silence on
Get Smart.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, well, this is like, so the
what?
Main thing
what
is...
What? What did you say?
I can't hear you. I can't hear you, caller.
Yeah. So, in my own life, I'm calling you on a Princess phone.
Uh-huh.
I don't no longer have a computer in my
home. Just if I could ask.
What color is it?
No. What makes it a Princess phone? Does it have like a little tiara on it, or does it wear like a ball gown?
No, I'm wearing a tiara.
Oh, okay.
I'm glad you can't see me. No, I'm joking. No, the main thing is...
Princess phone?
The great thing about the Princess phone, it's a phone... I was using a Panasonic answering machine kind of phone, and I figured, well, I guess I'm going to miss when the Pope calls me. So,
But what is a Princess phone? What
princess
makes it...
like a slimline phone.
Oh. Okay.
It's a phone without an answering machine, and the great thing about this is when the electricity goes out, you will still be able to have phone service. Whereas if you have a answering phone kind of machine, like a Panasonic machine, which I used to have.
Oh, yeah, it needs to have power.
Yeah, and so it's like, I'm just doing everything I can, but I'm still mad as heck that these wonderful individuals, these lovely individuals, are messing with my health, and I don't appreciate it.
Caller, what is a mini harmonizer?
The lady, and I forget the lady's name.
Why, Dave, obviously it's much smaller than a macro harmonizer.
Oh.
Exactly, exactly.
It's well, small one.
It's what it basically, I've been checking this out, and there's a naturopath, a chiropractic individual who sells one of these devices, and he characterizes the Earth's magnetic field as having declined in the last several decades by, a factor of maybe 30% or so. And also, he says since the 1930s, the amount of frequencies we're being exposed to worldwide is in the order of, 300 million, frequencies. So the main thing is, since health is my main hobby these days, since these lovely people are trying to like mess with my health. So
if I could just give you, do you want my opinion on that?
Thank you, Jonathan.
I should ask if you want my opinion about that.
Thank you. I do.
I don't think that KIUC is trying to mess with anybody's health. I just think that they're trying to secure their access to long-term revenue to sustain their business model. And the prime thing about smart meters, I believe, from their perspective, is that they are enhanced billing devices that will allow them increased ability to bill you.
Well, I understand. I mean, I used to be a businessman way back when, and I definitely understand the model for profit. But in, you know, viewing
now, they'll say they're not after profit because it's a nonprofit. But
you know, in watching, and thank God for Mr. Neil Chantara.
Uh huh.
You know, and he does a very good job in explaining, and he obviously has professional chops in terms of being a, you know, electrical engineer and all that jazz.
And he's a good guy.
Yeah, he's a wonderful man.
Very, very sweet individual.
Showing, and I also had a lovely conversation with his wife, who's a naturopath. And, you know, the main thing is I'm trying to get someone to come out, you know, and give me a reading in terms of, you know, what I'm actually being exposed to in terms of not so much my own home environment, but what the cumulative, vortex of my neighbors, you know, influencing my home situation. So because the woman, the scientist indicated that this influence can extend for up to a football field. So within one's neighborhood, unless you can get everyone in the neighborhood to cooperate, then it ain't going to do any good just for you to be, you know, to be electrically, magnetically, electromagnetic wise. So anyway, a mini harmonizer basically is a device which you can buy for, say, $175, say $250, and what that will do is it will nominalize all the bad energies, so you can.
What's nominalize? What does that mean?
Make it more like a normal kind of like what the body's correct electromagnetic ambiance, you could say, you know, a milieu or environment, and it'll extend, I believe, for 10 feet, so you can have like next to your bed. So I'm going to be using this, and when I go out, I'm going to be. And then I also look into, because the woman also mentioned, the scientist mentioned, wearing a Faraday hoodie. So you can get all these devices, you know, like, I mean, it's not going to be as good as if you're walking around with like a
Calvin Klein hoodie.
Exactly. It's not going to be as cool as if you walked around with your own, like, homemade tin foil. Then you could really get points. Then you could really, you know, be socially acceptable. Check out that guy with that tin foil. I'm joking. But the thing is, so you can, you know, you could go to the different websites, and you can see all the different types of clothing and hats and scarves and baklava. I'm talking about Greek pastry, I guess. Anyway,
caller, you're cracking me up.
Anyway, the main thing is I don't want to be cracked up, guys, and I just, so all these things, I'm just looking into, and I just, I feel great, and I just hope that all our citizens are availing themselves of all this good information that you and Dave and others are providing. So thank you for listening to me.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
Aloha. Okay, phone lines are open, 826-7771. Join the conversation here. Okay, let's see. We're going to move on to some world news.
News of the world.
Oh, we have another call. Let's go to the phones instead.
All right, news on the world on hold. Aloha, caller. I believe you're on the air.
Scary. Hey, Jonathan, thank you for running. You definitely had my vote, but I just want to air a little disappointment in Neil, who I also like and know to some degree. But when he dropped out, there were votes that were wasted on him. And
I don't really think that any vote is wasted. I think that, here's something that a lot of people don't know. If you take all the votes of the three incumbents and add them together, and you take all the votes of all the challengers and add them up all together, it's almost equal. So,
well, my point is, he was on the show a couple of weeks back, and he said, you know, I'm listed on the ballot, but don't vote for me because I want, you know, Jonathan or Adam to get in, and unfortunately, he was still listed, and I think he got 1,000-plus votes.
Yeah, he did. He got like 1,100 or so.
Which you could have got,
but it wouldn't have been enough to have made a difference. It wouldn't have elected anyone.
Yeah, Adam would have needed
another
1,300 votes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, well, I just think it was kind of a wasted move.
Well, you know, I don't think any move is a waste. We tried it; it wasn't effective, and then you learn from that, hopefully, and then try something else.
Yeah.
I mean, I hear what you're saying, caller.
Yeah, I got it. Okay. Well, thank you. I just wanted to vent my frustration in that. I was hoping one of you guys would at least get in there, and I thought that when he went on air and said, you know, basically don't vote for me, vote for the other guys, I don't think everybody heard the show, so people did vote for him. And I do think that those votes, you know, were wasted. If he said he wasn't going to run, why vote for me? And then those votes did get in there for no apparent reason, in my opinion.
All right. Hey, thanks for calling.
All right, thanks. Bye.
It's a nice sentiment, though.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, it was. Let's see. In the world, in the news of the world, the situation in Ukraine seems to be escalating. Let's see. Since the last show, Crimea voted to...
allegedly.
To secede from the Ukraine.
Allegedly.
And they became a an autonomous sovereign nation.
Well, that's what they said.
For a day.
All kinds of people contested that, right?
Well,
said it wasn't a valid election.
Who said that it wasn't a valid election?
A lot of EU and U.S. officials.
Oh, people that weren't satisfied with the results of it?
Well, you know, that's how it works, Dave. You know, if you don't like the outcome, then you... You might seek to find flaws in the process.
Well, let's see. One thing that I think is necessary when you have a vote, there's a UN a rule. It's a law that if you offer somebody the opportunity to join your federation, say for example,
mm-hmm.
They also say you have a colony. You have a colony in the
I have
country.
A colony.
You have a colony in the country. Okay, and that country wants to be. Become part of your country.
I have a colony, and it wants to be part of my country.
Rather than a colony, they want to be a full party country.
That's awesome.
Okay, and you give them the opportunity to vote for them. You also have to give them the opportunity to be an independent country.
Huh.
So it has to be on the ballot. So you can.
But that was never. That
you
was
can vote for the status quo. You can become an autonomous region, a country of your own, or you can join, you know, the mother country.
Well, it's interesting.
So
that's interesting that you lay that
was,
out.
Yeah, I don't know if that was done.
I know for a fact that wasn't done here in Hawaii. In the 1950s, the
right.
people here were given a thumbs up or thumbs down. They weren't given the option to be independent.
Right. So I think that's an important part of this, is that were they given the opportunity to be autonomous? Maybe they would rather be, you know, their own country rather than part of Russia, you know. And so I don't think it would be valid if they were not offered that opportunity. Anyway, but that being said... and then Russia voted to make it part of the Russian Federation.
So it come into the fold.
Okay. So a lot of countries have already said they're not going to recognize that change. They still think it should be part of the Ukraine. You know, John Kerry, our Secretary of State, has said that, you know, you can't, you know, expect a fair vote because right before the... You know, like a month or so ago, there was a coup, and they installed a pro-Russian head of state in that area.
Well, and it was a militarily occupied region.
Well, it wasn't a month ago. It was only a couple of weeks ago that happened. Anyway,
right. But that's the circumstance under which the vote took place.
Right. And
just
so,
like in Hawaii.
So also, though, but they're neglecting the fact that in the Ukraine, about a month ago, there was a coup, and then they took out the pro-Russian leader of the state, and they put in a pro-European head of state. And so what they're complaining about in Crimea has happened in the Ukraine already. But it's okay that it happened in our favor rather than, you know, going toward the Russian side.
Well, they say, whose ox is gored?
Whose ox is gored?
Yeah.
Is that a Ukrainian... proverb
think so.
Or something.
I don't think so. But you know what it means.
Doesn't make
is,
much sense in Hawaii. Not many oxen around here. You know?
Yeah, not too many oxen. But what it means is, you know, if you lose, then you're going to complain. If you don't like the outcome.
Right. Yeah. And so here, John Kerry's complaining about the coup on that side when he's not complaining about the coup on the other side. Anyway. So since then,
selective complaining.
Yeah. Since then, they threatened and they implemented some sanctions against Russia.
Well, those were funny. Okay.
Yeah, I know it. They're some people in the Russian government cannot travel to the U.S.
I read,
or can't take their money out of U.S. banks as if they hadn't already done that.
Yeah.
In anticipation. You know?
I read a quote from some Russian minister, and he said, well, I don't have any funds in U.S. banks, and my interest in the United States culture is Tupac Shakur, Allen Ginsberg, and Pollock.
Jonathan Pollock.
Jackson Pollock.
Jackson? Is that the
yeah,
artist?
Yeah, the painter, yeah.
Yeah.
And he said he doesn't need to go into the U.S. to listen to that music, read those books, or appreciate those paintings. I thought that was pretty funny.
Right. So anyway, you know, it was just a slap on the wrist. But the thing is that this could escalate. Say, if there's no change in the situation soon, then they may implement more sanctions and more sanctions. And so the Russians have said, well, if you interfere with our economy, then we have the ability to crash the U.S. dollar and your entire economy, because you know they're holding $1 trillion of U.S. Treasury bonds. If they put those all in the market at the same time, that would crash the market. That would crash our economy. And so, you know, Obama says, well, you crash our economy, we can crash yours too. We have the means of doing that as well by shutting off all your exports and everything like that. And so,
it sounds like, how does that sound like any of that's a good idea?
I know it. It sounds like, you know, the same policy of nuclear arms here. You know, the mass
mutually
assured destruction,
economic destruction.
So now we got mutually assured economic destruction,
yeah.
And it's just as you know, devastating as the use of nuclear weapons.
What perhaps. A bunch
you
of know, babies.
Like I know it. And so nobody's winning from this exchange here. And so I'm hoping it doesn't get out of hand, but it very well could.
Well, what are you going to do about it, Dave? That's my question to you.
What am I going
to
do about
it? Yeah. What are you going to do about the conflict in Crimea?
I'm doing it right now. This is what I'm doing. I'm informing people about the hypocrisy of the situation. And maybe somebody listening will do something about it, because
are you going to send Obama an email?
Yeah, that's a good idea. I'll send him an email. That'll change the situation. Oh, here's another thing going on there. Big NATO exercises, military exercises.
I think that's good that they're doing exercises. That helps build a body up, right?
In the Ukraine. So they're going to be sending 20,000-30,000 U.S. and Ukrainian or UK people, British.
Oh, the U.S. and U.K.?
And U.K. And,
do you know what that spells as an acronym, U.S.-U.K.?
I do now. I hadn't thought about it before. But and NATO troops are going to have military exercises in the Ukraine. Now,
uh-huh.
You know, the Ukraine is very divided, for one.
Yeah,
I mean, in the eastern side, it's all Russian ethnic people, you know, people that want to be part
and
of Russia.
And Tartars.
And Tartars. And then the eastern part is
more Ukrainian.
Wants to be closer to Europe and more European in that regard. You know,
they might split up just like the Czech and the Slovak republics did.
That's very likely, I think. But then again, that may be the plan to begin with, for that matter. So I don't know, but I don't think that would be good for the stability of the region necessarily. You know,
why can't we just let people do what they want to do?
Well, that's what they ought to do. But I think if you get a look at who provoked the situation in the first place, you know, the first volley in this exchange here was the U.S., Europe, NATO trying to get their foothold in a former Russian republic and on the doorstep of the Russian Federation.
Well, they've been chewing up the former Soviet bloc for the last 20 years,
which is in total violation of the protocols that were signed. It was the 1994 Budapest Convention, which basically, when we were negotiating with Russia, some of the areas had broken off, and what do we do about them? And, you know, we specifically said we would not move our bases into these countries.
I guess we did.
Poland, Romania, Hungary, Georgia. I mean, these are all, you know, parts right on the doorstep of the Russian Federation. And so, of course, they're upset about it.
Well, isn't that what happens when empires contest each other? They, like, go for the booty, try and pick up a country here, a country there, more satellite or vassal states. I mean, that's like...
Yeah, but that's so 19th century, though, you know?
I mean, it's so first millennium. I mean, it's like...
I know it. I was hoping we would be beyond that, but evidently we're not.
Hmm.
Well, let's see. Phone lines are open, 826-7771. Let's see.
It's kind of boring, isn't it?
What's boring?
All these great powers contesting over to who will rule whose lives and who will control what economy and what resources. And it's all just so tiresome.
Yeah, it is. But it's also, it's not the American people that are demanding that we invade the Ukraine or we move into these, to Romania.
No, it's
people
it's
here
the, it's
could
the government.
Care less and would rather see our resources bettering the lives of Americans at home. You know, and so why we're spending trillions of dollars to micromanage the entire planet here when our infrastructure is crumbling, half of our people in the country are starving. I mean, it's just, it doesn't make sense. So I think we need somehow to change that situation.
Well, actually, that brings us maybe to another topic that we could discuss, and that is the impending collapse of the global industrial civilization.
Oh, yeah, okay. Tell us about that.
There was just a study that was, I guess it was funded by NASA, but they didn't endorse it. Or there's some squabbling about, like, who's responsible for
it. It's a University of Minnesota professors or something like that, you know, who wrote it.
Yeah. But I thought it was interesting because what they said basically is, you know, our industrial civilization is chewing up resources around the world, you know, at a much faster rate than can be sustained. And so we're going to blow through all kinds of energy resources, loss of topsoil, the oceans are getting acidified, the temperature is raising around the world, more climactic chaos, diminishing of fresh water, you know, all kinds of, not just one or two things, but like tons of things. So that's a problem.
It's not really a problem as much as a situation. It's a condition, you know.
It's a big problem.
Well, you know, but it's not something that can easily be solved. You know, it's a condition. It's something that exists. You know?
Yeah, but it didn't just magically happen. It's happening as a result of our industrial global civilization.
Right.
So that's the condition. That's the set of conditions.
Right.
And you know, many are calling that problematic. But so that was one factor. And then the second factor that they identified is a massive disparity of wealth inside a society where you have a few people who are hyper wealthy, and then most everybody else doesn't have access to resources. You know, relatively poor, And the reason why they said that was a problem, not just because it was like morally wrong or unfair, but because the decision makers in that society are insulated from the conditions that our global civilization is creating. They don't have to suffer the consequences of those problems. So they keep making the decisions which create the problem that they don't suffer from until it's too late to do anything about it.
Well, that assumes that the wealthy are also in charge of the government.
That's that. Look around, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, that is certainly the case right now. But
right.
But would it be the same if you had a big elite class of people that didn't, you know, really run the government? They just did their own thing.
Uh-huh.
Would that be the same problem?
If poor people
were in the government and saw the poverty and the conditions that existed and were more empathetic, had more empathy toward that.
Oh, so like enlightened dictatorships.
Something like that, I guess.
Well, that would be better than what we have.
Yeah.
Because what we have is the decision makers don't have to suffer the consequences of the social decisions that they're making.
Right.
And so, you know, they can drive the bus off the road, but if they're not in the bus, if they're driving the bus by remote control, everybody in the bus goes over the cliff, but they're unharmed.
The bus driver's unharmed.
Yeah, the bus driver.
Okay, so did they say what the time frame of this collapse might be? I mean, are we talking generations, 100 years, or a decade or two?
I think it's hard to know. You know, there's a whole bunch of factors that are in play, and I think, I mean, for most of my adult life, people have been kind of debating about this. So it seems like it's imminent in a historical perspective, but you know, historical time frames are not like 2 weeks or 3 weeks. They can be decades in length.
Right.
So it's hard to say exactly when the hoo-ha is going to hit the fan in a big, big way, but we're already experiencing all kinds of, you know, indicator events and stuff.
Right. price of gasoline, you know, it's going back up again.
Commodity fluctuation, civil wars over resources, lack of resources.
Right. Huge mega drought in California, like a 500-year event going on there.
Yeah, and I heard recently, because in my Hawaiian studies class that I'm taking, there was a big drought recently in the Marshall Islands. And those are mostly low-lying coral atolls. They don't have a lot of land base. So if they don't get rain on a pretty frequent basis, it's a big deal to them because they don't have, like, glaciers or rivers where water can be stored and continues to flow. So it's even a bigger deal to nations like that. And then, you know, with ocean levels going up, those islands are only 5 to 10 feet above sea level anyway. So, you know, the sea level goes up a couple feet. Not that big of a deal if you're on a continent, but if you're on a low-lying coral atoll, the whole thing can be swamped.
Yeah.
So, you know, but the Marshallese or the Micronesians aren't the ones who have their hands on the levers of our industrial global economy. So they're going to suffer the consequences, but they don't have any ability to affect the decisions or the outcomes. So that's a problem.
Did the study offer any suggestions on what might be done to mitigate some of these outcomes?
Yeah, two things. Reduce consumption of resources and create more equitable societies.
A more equitable distribution of those resources.
Of wealth and resources and access to resources and tools and ability to get stuff done. A more egalitarian society.
Egalitarian.
Yeah. Where people are relatively equal to each other in terms of their you know, ability to do stuff, capacity to resources, access to education, you know, material wealth, stuff like that.
Right. Yeah. Well, we're certainly not moving in that direction.
No, we're actually moving in the opposite direction.
Right.
For the last 40 years, pretty consistently in the U.S.
Yeah, and it seems like the last 30, 40 years have kind of consolidated that momentum. You know, and
it seems to be accelerating.
Yeah. So more equitable distribution of resources and then a lower average per capita consumption of resources.
Yep. And a turning to more sustainable forms of consumption. So, like, you know, living within your environmental means.
Yeah. Now, what does that do for the population of the planet then? I mean, can with a lowered lifestyle, can we still support 7 billion people, 8 billion people, 9 billion?
Do you think I'm the smartest man in the world, Dave?
Well, you read the study, though. I was hoping that maybe those smart people that wrote it told you that.
I don't know if anybody knows what we can do differently than what we're doing right now. Or maybe lots of people have ideas, but they're not in a position to be able to, you know, make that happen very quickly. But I think that, you know, the sooner that more of us start trying to imagine a different way of going about doing things, the sooner we'll be able to get some answers and begin moving in that direction. See, like, here's Maren. She might have an idea.
May I make a comment?
Sure.
I was browsing around the internet this week and came upon Amory Lovin's website.
Smart
and
man.
He's got a great lecture that he did called Reinventing Fire. And it's all about how we can change our whole basis of power. We can totally eliminate nuclear, oil, and coal within the next, as soon as we decide to go down this pathway, how we can greatly improve our vehicles by making them out of this carbon-based material that's stronger than steel. I don't know.
And lighter weight, no doubt.
And way lighter weight, because we're using gas to move 2 tons of vehicle every time we have to go somewhere. And if we could just move, even if we got it down to moving 1 ton of a vehicle, that would half of our gas consumption right there.
Right.
Or, you know, he's all about electric vehicles, of course, you know, generating electricity from solar and wind and stuff like that. And he's got it all figured out, you know, like, did all the research. He's got a whole institute, the Rocky Mountain Institute,
the RMI,
in Colorado.
Yeah, snowmass.
And they sit around and they think about all the things and they figure it all out numerically, mathematically, how this is going to work. If only the president would listen to him. If only the world would listen to him, it would be great.
He's got
a house in Snowmass that he does not even have to heat. Snowmass, Colorado, where it gets down to minus 40 and stuff like that. I mean, freezing, very, very cold near Aspen, colder than Aspen, Colorado, in ski country, and he does not even have to use a heater in there. It's or an air conditioner in the summer. He's got it like super thick insulation. He's got this windows with a certain kind of polyurethane shade on it that keeps all the heat in, and you know, just one thing after another. He grows bananas in his house there in Snowmass with no heat from the rest of the, you know, any kind of fossil.
So he's got it. He's got things technically worked out.
He's got them technically worked out, and
but how do we have it politically worked out? Like how can we make those steps to go in that direction? Because right now there's you know, massively powerful players around the world who benefit from the oil industry and the nuclear industry. And, you know, coal and all this stuff. So they're not going to just give up and walk away.
No, they're not. Hopefully we're all waking up enough that we're all saying, you know, wait a minute, we don't want to go down this road anymore. We realize that we don't have an unlimited amount of resources. We got to take care of what we got and figure out how to do it a better way. And it was hopeful to see that, because it's so easy to get like, oh my God, you know, where are we going and why are we in this handbasket, you know? It totally seems like that so many times. But that was a really fun thing to look at. And it's very technical lecture. You know, he was giving this lecture to a bunch of other scientists.
That dude's like a
way over my head.
He's a super genius, that guy.
Yes, he is. But, you know, I remember back in the 70s hearing about him. He said, like, if everybody would just, you know, if the government could buy everybody a new Toyota car, you know, at the time Toyotas were the only car that was getting good gas mileage.
Okay.
You know, back then, it was in the 60s or 70s he said this. And we would save so much gas that it would pay for everybody's new car. You know, it was like, and he figures all these things out mathematically and stuff. So I believed him. But anyway, we didn't take his advice then, and it doesn't look like we're going to now. But we still could. Maybe the next president will make him, you know, Minister of Resources or something. You know, something like Secretary of Internal Resources. I mean, that's what it would take. Somebody like that to be appointed to an office where it really makes a difference and say, okay, this is what we're doing. We're getting rid of these nuclear power plants. We're not going to fight wars for oil anymore. We're going to put up more solar power. I mean, look, Hawaii is putting up, we're going to have 50%, you know, when, by 2030 or 2020 or something like that?
Probably sooner.
That's great. I mean, that's huge. 10 years ago, I wouldn't have believed it if you told me that. And here we are. So,
all right,
we're approaching it. So there is hope.
All right. Thanks, Maren. Jump in anytime you have a thought like that. Okay, phone line's still open, 826-7771. Also, we have a transmitter over in Oahu, and if you want to call in, if you're listening in Oahu, call us on our toll-free line, 866-275-1112. Last show, you weren't here. I put out that call, said, I never had a call from Oahu.
Oh, I heard that guy call in.
And, this guy Jacob called in.
Yeah, he sounded like he was sitting on his couch doing bong hits or something.
He was a high school student, he was just driving around, heard the call to call into the studio. He didn't even know who we were, for that matter. So he was pretty entertaining, and maybe he'll call in again. But anybody else from Oahu would love to hear from you and find out what's going on over there. Let's see. So, industrial society is collapsing as we speak,
maybe that's a good thing.
If it's done orderly, it's kind of like with the population. You know, I think it's going to be hard to maintain a population of 7 billion people without fossil fuels. And
like tankers going back and forth across the oceans.
Right. Yeah. And so
tankers.
And so the population should be less, but we don't want, you know, to kill anybody, but natural attrition would be nice if we can get to a sustainable level like that. So it would be better if it were a orderly transition to that end here. So we got a phone call here.
Aloha, caller. Welcome to Out of the Box.
You remember that gentleman who was going to start a series of rechargeable stations in Hawaii for electric cars? You know what happened to that man or his idea?
No.
Thanks.
Are you going to tell us?
No, I heard about this, saw a news report on it, and he was going to invest. I think he was from some foreign background, but he was like an American citizen now. And he had plans to put these stations all over Hawaii, and haven't heard anything about it.
What was his business model? How was that going to How is that going to work?
Well, he was going to, you know, put several millions, tens of millions of his own bucks into creating the series of service stations that would charge electric vehicles.
Sure, the infrastructure itself.
Yes, but I just don't know what I forgot the guy's name, but I just wonder what happened to his project. You know, it's just, you know, all these ideas, I just think it's going to be a bit of a slug. I mean, in terms of getting on what the lady was saying, all these things sound great, but when we have like hundreds of years of coal and we have all these other individuals who have these vested interests, I just wonder. I mean, I'm not really encouraged seeing what a great job Mr. Obama has done. So,
well, I mean, honestly, let's just for a moment we'll fantasize, okay?
Right.
And let's say that that Obama was a combination of Albert Einstein, Mother Teresa, and who would be like a get stuff done kind of person.
Well, I wish he was more like Teddy Roosevelt in his first administration. You know, someone who could really take the bull by the horns and get things done. I just think he's just been a weak wimp of an individual. I just
well, here's where I was going with this yeah. fantasy of some kind of super president with magic powers.
Oh, well, I see.
You know, he still has to work with this Senate and still has to work with this Congress. So I don't know how much that person can do.
Well, you're right. You know, but I'm just hoping that you know, each year, in my humble opinion, it gets worse and worse. And I just, as you alluded to, the last 40 years, the average working stiff has really gotten the short end of the stick. It's just like when you look at the real wages,
yeah,
and inflation,
flat.
It's just like, and I mean, and I. The only good thing is we don't have a value-added tax like they have in Europe. Because if you go to Europe, almost everything you buy, especially, of course, gasoline, is like $12 to $14 a gallon. But like electronic gear, almost everything you buy, they slap an additional 20% tax on. So it's like the British, they go to France to buy their booze, and then it's cheaper for them to fly to, like, New York and buy their electronics and go out to dinner and then or whatever, clothes, and then come back to the U.K. and then pay the duties than to buy it in the U.K.
Now, I saw a good analysis recently that, and I'm kind of in favor of a value-added tax or a federal sales tax if they eliminated the income tax.
Well, don't you think that would be regressive?
No. You eliminate the income tax. So all the money you make is yours. You can keep it if you do what you want with it.
Uh-huh.
But when you buy a product, then you pay tax. You know, and so it's a consumption tax, basically. The richer you are, the more tax you pay because the more you're buying, probably. You know.
Well, but rich people don't necessarily contribute. You know, they spend a smaller percentage of their assets on their day-to-day consumption stuff.
Oh, right. And if they invested in companies that hire people, you know, they're helping out society in that respect. And so they would have more money to invest into projects like that. But then they're not taxed. The only way tax is accrued is on consumption. Okay. And so you don't have to, you know, hire somebody to do your taxes for you. There's no penalties because the tax is always collected, you know, because right now you file your tax forms, you make a mistake on there, you can go to jail. But if you go to the store and you pay your income, you pay the sales tax, you know, there's no threat of jail there, you know. So,
and you don't think that would be regressive?
Well, I mean, maybe you could exempt, say, food, something, you know, some basic necessities at some level to where, you know, the poor don't pay as much on that, but then have, you know, all, you know, non-essential items you would pay taxes on, you know, and you'd have to adjust the percentage of it to have enough money for the government to operate. But in general, you know, all the money you make, you keep, you put it in the bank, you save it, you know, you don't have to pay any tax on that at all until you go to spend it.
So how do you move that from Dave's good idea to the way that we do things in this society?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of talk about a value-added tax or a federal sales tax, but they never include removing the income tax, you know. But, you know, Ron Paul had been talking about that, you know, and a few libertarian-type candidates have brought that up. But, you know, just have it part of the conversation where people are, you know, talking about it, and it eventually may get implemented at some level, but I think that would be helpful or more helpful for society, you know, and kind of direct, because, you know, that's what they do with the tax situation. They try and manipulate your behavior, or to, so like you buy a house, you know, the interest you pay on the house, on the house mortgage, is exempted from taxes. Or, you know, you deduct that from your taxes. All right, so that's the way they incentivize home ownership. Okay, and so you can incentivize certain things by adjusting the tax levels on them, things like that.
Like, know, incentivizing something. The consumption of petroleum resources by subsidizing that.
Yeah, so if you want to eliminate the incentives on petroleum, well, you take away all the subsidies on it, and, you know, you raise the taxes on it, and then people find something else. And so that's a way of doing it.
But the people who are making the decisions aren't doing that. They're doing that in their self-interest. They're not doing that in Dave's interest.
Right. Well,
can I jump in on the conversation?
If you'd be quick, I got another call right back.
I will. The thing that interests me is that, you know, the last 5 years, or since the disaster and financial disaster in 2008 or so, 7 or 8, the thing is we've been buying all these junk mortgages and all these, like, student loans and all these. Then we've been, like, issuing this, you know, treasury bills. So we've basically added another $4 or $5 trillion to the debt, and mathematically it's almost impossible to pay this off. And then secondly,
which sucks unless you're the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, and the whole thing is, what bothers me is the fact that they've been trying to say, well, we got to keep the economy going, so we're trying to keep the interest rates low, especially like the 10-year, and the, you know, and so. So the interest rates, so if you're the big players, you can borrow all this money at practically 0% interest rate, and if you're the small individual, average citizen, you're practically making nothing on any money you have in the bank, and you're basically, you know, losing. So I just think that soon there's going to be a tremendous crisis in our, regardless of whether the Russians dump, you know, their treasuries, you dump their treasuries. I just think there's going to have to be some kind of rapprochement, some kind of reconciliation with, you know, with the financial doo-doo our country is in. So I you know, all these ideas sound great. I mean, like, they say, you want to look at the future of America, look at Japan. Japan, for 20 years or so, they were in a state of deflation. And so now, Mr. Abe is, you know, he just announced the new budget, and half of the budget is from borrowing, and the other, basically the other half, is from income taxes, and he wants to put a huge consumption tax, so people are running out and buying all this stuff before this huge consumption tax. And he says, well, we're going to give the poor a break, but I haven't seen any details and how he's going to give the poor a break. And so, you know, I remember the good old days in the 50s and 60s when the economy was growing at 7 or 8% at least per year, and there was plenty of jobs. And this is before all the, you know, LBJ's, you know, new
Great Society and
Great Society programs. I mean, this is, America was doing pretty good.
Yeah, and back then corporations actually paid taxes, and a lot more than individuals.
And back then we were discovering new cheap oil all the time.
Right.
And a request. I would like to, you know, Dave, your expertise is in ecological, environmental.
Environmental, yeah.
So I would like some program you to just share some of your ideas and some of your musings, okay?
Okay. All right.
Thank you, guys.
Well,
get another caller standing by?
I do, but I need to do the top of the hour business here first. I need to tell you that you're listening to KKCR Honolulu, KAQA Kilauea, Kauai Community Radio, also K284 AL in Haleiwa. So we've got an hour left in the show, and this next hour is brought to you in part by the following wonderful underwriters.
Coming up this weekend, there's a lot happening on the South Shore celebrating Prince Kuhio, featuring Ledward Ka'apana and Mike Ka'ava in concert at the Grand Hyatt Kauai Resort and Spa on Saturday, the 22nd, as well as many Native Hawaiian cultural demonstrations and crafts on the 21st and 23rd. Also, the Prince Kuhio ceremonies at Prince Kuhio Park on the 22nd at 10 a.m. and Kauai's Outrigger long-distance canoe races between Kalapaki Beach, Kukui'ula Harbor, and Salt Palms Park. All events are open to the public. Daily event list online at princekuhio.net or by calling the Grand Hyatt Kauai at 240-6369.
And mahalo to those folks for supporting Kauai Community Radio. Okay, we're going to go right to the phones.
Aloha, hey. Caller. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it? How you doing? You hear me good?
Good.
And, well, I just wanted to, you know, respond to the caller before the break and say, I feel him, but, you know, I disagree with his Obama stance because, like you said, you know, he was working in a bad, between Congress and everything he had against him. America as a voting body. I'm sorry, my wife's calling here at the worst possible time. But I wanted to say, I also wanted to say that I think his anger is misguided because I think the 2010 ruling from the five justices with Citizens United is really where the focal point should be.
You're talking about Citizens United?
Yes, because this is where these mega corporations right now have really, I mean, they're already, already going the wrong way. Once it was 2010, it was all bets are off, right? So now we need to amend the Constitution so that they revoke their citizen status so we can redefine what people is.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
their status as a person that they claim they have civil rights.
And I hear about his pain, and I get it.
And they claim that their money is free speech, and they should be able to spend their money unlimited.
You know, I'm not saying President Obama is perfect, but I'm saying he was a better choice at the given time. And if you really look at the numbers, he's brought our deficit down. He hasn't made all the best choices. You know, I don't agree with everyone that he's done. You know, I don't like the drone program, personally.
Yeah, the drone program.
Not the expansion of it, for sure.
No, more the unmitigated gall of someone who thinks they can kill people around the world at the push of a button.
Well, that's even a different story, too, you know. I've been in two branches of the service, and if you pick up arms against us, I'll put the first round to his head. So that's a different story with me. But I really don't like the expansion of the drone program, which is a different story. But, you know, I went to listen to David Cobb with my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if anybody's out there listening and you can still see me as that guy and the thing that I do, even though I'm going to express it differently than him, Google up, vote to amend. That's where everybody needs to be focused right now. That's the battle right now.
And why do you...
I'll tell you why.
Because
mechanism that the GMO corporations and every other corporation that is running right now shadily is running there getting away with it. When they go up in court under the 14th Amendment, they're getting away from the EPA. That's one of the mechanisms that has defanged the EPA and all of these other kinds of regulatory system and check and balances. And so if you really are concerned, Google it up. Put your vote behind it if you're a registered voter, you know. Put your vote behind it. Call your congressman, whatever. But you know what I mean? That's the mechanism. That's where the anger should be, bro.
Move to amend.
Move to vote to amend. Vote.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I think that's a huge problem here, and that would, you know,
right?
give more power to people.
Yeah, everything that we all grumbling about. It's just the systematic deregulation process that we had put in checks and balances to get the system that the guy was referencing back to.
Yeah, I think what you have is, you know, corporate power has become unleashed, and they've taken control of some of the regulatory, former regulatory agencies, so that now they're running their own show.
Well, that's the problem right there, you know. and you can't go through the legal body. You can't go and make a law against them. They're getting away with it because there's no accountability, right? One, that's what the preparation body is.
Yeah, and limited accountability.
They're getting treated with civil liberties.
They're just playing the game. They're pushing their agenda, and they're being quite successful in the U.S. That's for sure.
Well, I'm saying that those five justices ruling the last coup de grace for them to kill us. And if we don't wake up to the real battle, and we're still talking about President Obama, which is not where we should be focused, right? You need to go, like you guys pointed out, you got to go through Congress and all of that.
Yeah,
that means you gotta write other states' congressmen. You know what I mean? I heard at the seminar, it's no longer a world that you can show up every 2 to 4 years and vote and think you count.
Yeah, well, that's not working so well. So
yeah, but you
people
know,
gotta step up more. Yeah,
you gotta step up more. You gotta teach your kids to care about the cause and not say it's a rigged system, so don't get involved. You know what I mean? In fact, it's because it's rigged, you need to become involved.
More
it's rigged, the more you need to be involved, my brothers.
That's great.
You know what I mean? I was passed through the I-91, complete product of the plantation mentality, coming down completely. I can go and reread everything. I can read the text again, learn as an adult because I was suffering, like you guys point out. You know?
Right.
But now I teach my kids to think like that before they even reach 30.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Learn civics. Learn them. Use it.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in with that perspective. I think that's quite valuable.
All right, you guys. Bye-bye.
I love. I've been following that Move to Amend group there, and they.
What can you tell us about that?
I was hoping that, well, it came out of Citizens United, as the caller mentioned there, and what they're trying to do is get a constitutional amendment written and passed. It's got to be through Congress with a supermajority, both houses, plus it's got to be ratified in 37 states to become part of the Constitution.
That sounds like a lot of organizational capacity.
And they've been at it for a couple of years now, and they seem to be, you know, getting some momentum there. But, I was hoping that it would be on the ballot in the last election, and at this rate, I doubt if it would be on the ballot by the next presidential election, for that matter. But, if it's initiated, it seems like most amendments have to be initiated by Congress themselves and passed Congress. Then it goes to the different states. And I'm not sure if it can happen the other way around, if the states can pass it first and then expect the Congress to follow up on that and to finally get the majority or not.
That's a good question.
Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Yo, what's up? Who's this?
Who's this?
Oh, this is Jacob from Ohio.
Oh, Jacob. Hey, how you doing, man?
I'm good. Who's this?
This is Dave.
Is this John or something?
This is Dave again.
Oh, is this Dave?
Yeah.
Oh, what's up, Dave?
Not much. Hey, what, you going to give us regular news reports from Oahu now?
I heard they're putting smart meters on Oahu.
Oh, they are? Tell us about
it. That's what you're, I think, I know last week I called in and, like, I guess your producer answered, I guess this guy named Tim answered the phone and he told me that they're putting smart meters on Oahu, which is kind of not good.
It's a pilot project.
Yeah, they want to just do a couple thousand houses and see how it works and then decide if they're going to force it on everybody else. So what do you think about smart meters there, Jacob?
I don't think they should put smart meters on Oahu.
Do you know much about them? Have you done research on them?
No, but I heard like you can get sick from them or something.
Yeah, that's what some people say, yeah.
Who's in the studio with you?
Jonathan, he's the co-host today. Or co-host every
day. Jonathan?
Hey, Jacob, what's up with you, man?
I'm just hanging out in beautiful Oahu.
So you're listening to us on 104.7?
Yeah, but it's not coming in pretty good.
No. Last time I was over there, it was kind of weak. We need to up the signal.
I'm not really that much of an internet person. I know you guys are on the internet, but I know you guys. I'm not that much of an internet person. So
maybe.
I don't understand. Like it's all like staticky. I don't know if it's like weak or what.
Where exactly on Oahu are you?
Huh?
Where on Oahu are you?
What city am I in?
Yeah, where on the island of Oahu are you calling from right now?
Are you down?
I'm actually calling from Malalani.
Malalani, okay.
Okay, so I
but
think
I know you guys
the transmitter is down.
I know your guys' transmitter is down in Haleiwa.
I think it's actually down downtown.
Yeah, by Pearl City, I believe.
Yeah, we call it Haleiwa, but it's actually downtown, down in town.
Oh, it's downtown?
Yeah.
I thought it was down in, like, Haleiwa.
Well, that's our call letters. I don't know why they do that, but it's not there. Anyway, hey, Jacob, maybe what you can do when you call in, have some news from Oahu. Let us know what's going on.
Yeah, or give us a signal. Give us a signal report to let us know how the FM signal sounds. You say it's a little crackly right now?
Hey, let me, see, like, all you're hearing is this.
That's
awesome. That is awesome, Jacob.
No, all you're hearing is, like, static.
Huh.
Yeah.
All I'm hearing is, like, static.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know why the station is like so staticky. It's just so weird.
It's just weak over there. We need to get some more power, more electricity.
You need to get like 10,000 watts.
There you go.
You guys need to have like 10,000 watts of power. You know, so that way you guys can your transmitter can reach Melani.
Yeah. So Jacob, next time you call in, check out some news from Oahu. You can be our roving reporter on Oahu and tell us what's going on over there.
Well, I mean, you want to know what's going on over here?
Yeah.
Okay, the weather's nice. There's not a single cloud in the sky. It's not raining. It's nice, you know, it's like really, like, awesome.
That's fantastic to hear.
All right,
Jacob.
Yeah. Hey, we got another call coming in. You got any closing remarks here for our Kauai audience?
Well, you know, I just don't think the island of Hawaii should have smart meters because, you know, people can just die from them.
That's right. He has a good website you should check out, takebackyourpower.org. It's got a lot of information about
it. I think Hawaii should just, you know, not. I think Hawaii should not have smart meters. I think they should just, like, you know, not even bring the smart meters on the island.
Right.
Well, thanks for sharing your perspective. That's really great. And thanks for the signal report, too.
Well, I mean, like, I think you should, like, get your FM signal, like, kind of. You guys should, like, get it kind of, your FM signal should be, like, strong, you know, because I'm, like, barely hearing you guys on the radio with all that.
Get a good antenna.
It was pretty good before, and then all of a sudden it just got weak.
Go hook up a big antenna on your roof, and you'll get it better.
I don't know if that's going to happen.
All right. Hey, thanks for calling. Bye, Jacob.
All right.
That's quality radio at its finest, Dave.
There you go. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
You know, I think KKCR should just dispense with electricity and use carrier pigeons. You know? And, by the way, I think Jacob should run for governor because he's obviously more intelligent than Abercrombie.
He sounds like he's really plugged in, that guy.
And much more passionate, you know. Maybe he could take Dianne Feinstein's job, you know. Anyways, thanks for the show. I love you.
All right. Aloha.
Thanks.
Okay, so move to amend we were talking about. They are trying to get the constitutional amendment to remove corporate personhood. And here's another...
Kind of like a circumcision, huh?
A good organization that I just came across today. And I'd like to maybe do this regularly, bring up people that are making a change in the world. And so if anybody wants to
help them. That sounds kind of refreshing.
Yeah. There's this group called Global Witness. They're out of the UK, globalwitness.org. And the chairman, the head of this, her name is Charmaine Gooch. And she's got a new campaign here now to abolish anonymous corporations. And she... They got a great website, and she just
What are anonymous corporations?
Well, she just won the TED Speaking Award for the year, the best TED. You familiar with the TED Talks?
Yeah, TED Talks.
TED Talks, yeah.
And TED, it stands for
Technology,
Education and Duh.
I think it's not Duh. It's probably something else, but. So she won $1 million award as the best idea on TED for last year.
Well, that's going to bug me not to know what the D stands for.
Yeah, I used to know it. But anyway, so she wants to abolish anonymous corporations. So right now, if you know, you can start a corporation yourself. You just get on a website there, go to a place that has, pretty lax regulations.
Like the Cayman Islands or something?
The Cayman Islands or the state of Delaware.
Mm-hmm.
Like half the corporations in the world are registered in the state of Delaware because they have absolutely no regulations there on it. So anybody can start a corporation, and you can also remain anonymous. So you can call yourself, ExxonMobil or whatever, and start a corporation.
Well, you can't call yourself that. Because that's already taken.
Yeah, somebody's taken. But you just pick a name, and then your name, the name of the person that owned it, is hidden. Okay, so nobody knows who owns it. So you can go out there and get contracts, and you can spill oil all over the place, and nobody knows who's behind it. So some of these corporations are going into these undeveloped countries, and they're bribing their way in, they're stealing all the resources, and they're contaminating the environment there. But nobody knows who's behind it because these corporations are all anonymous. And another thing these corporations do is they have different layers. So you can have the owner of one corporation is another corporation. And that
Shell corporation.
And that, Shell's already taken too.
No, they're shells. They're shells inside shells.
Okay, so you have to, so you can have, many layers of corporations, and so it makes it very difficult. So even when they commit crimes, it's difficult for law enforcement to find out who is involved there because, of these anonymous corporations. So they have a huge effort now globally to abolish anonymous corporations. And that is, and according to this talk that I saw this afternoon, is already making some inroads. The EU Parliament has voted in support of this, the UK, not getting much traction in the U.S. yet because it's so corporate dominated. But, they're already getting a lot of momentum to this, and they're trying to get laws passed in most major countries to abolish anonymous corporations. They're trying to set up a website where the ownership of every corporation in the world can be easily researched by anybody. So if a corporation moves into your neighborhood, Monsanto, Syngenta, you say, who's behind this anyway? You can look up and find out who exactly owns that corporation. And
then you can send them an email?
You can send them an email.
A really angry, well-written email?
With caps, all caps in there, and really nail them on it, And so you can find out who's doing the dirty deeds in your neighborhood and help to at least expose the situation.
Did you want to share an excerpt from her talk? Or
I was going to, but unfortunately, the way it was written, it was more an acceptance speech for this award rather than explaining. She had an older one there. I may try to pull up, but we try to find people with great ideas, people who are doing something and trying to make a difference in solving the problems that we've been talking about here, because one of the issues that we're talking about here is, who's behind the situation in the Ukraine? It's in large part the corporations that stand to benefit from the exploitation of those resources, the bankers who are going to steal the pensions of the country there. And it's often the corporations that are behind a lot of these global events that are going on. And so, you know, exposing the owners of that. So now you can go in and see, you know, who owns that bank and that is causing all the trouble in Ukraine. And you can really, expose the wrongdoing going on there. So check out Global Witness if you are so inclined, globalwitness.org. And I thought that sounded like a great idea. What do you think, Jonathan? Is that a good idea? Do you think you see benefit of that?
I'd like to hear more about what Jacob thinks are good solutions to the challenges that face us, because he seems like a very passionate, articulate, problem-solving kind of guy.
Okay. So, Jacob, check out globalwitness.org and let us know what you think of that. Okay. Phone lines are open, 826-7771. Call in and join this conversation, or else we'll play some music or something like that.
Hey, you know what? On a different note.
Yeah, what's up?
I wanted to wish you a happy spring.
Spring has sprung.
Yeah.
So is today the first day of spring?
You know, I don't know exactly when it is. It might be tomorrow or, you know, maybe it was a couple days ago.
No, it's either today or tomorrow, usually 20th or 21st.
But it's right around now. And so, happy spring equinox. I guess that means that the sun is directly over the equator and it's equal day and equal night. And so from this point on, since we're north of the equator, the days will get longer than the nights. And that I think that's kind of a fun global planetary rhythm kind of thing. It's nice to notice and acknowledge that.
It's like the respiration, the breathing of the planet, because now the life on the northern hemisphere is coming alive and
it's going to perk up with more sunshine,
pumping out oxygen and clearing the air.
Mm-hmm.
And
like the lungs of the planet are breathing.
That's right, yeah. So The days will get longer. I'm actually ready for summer now. It's been the coldest, wettest winter that I recall on Kauai. I've been here 15 years, and I don't remember it ever being this cold or this rainy.
Yeah, I had a record cold at our place. It was 56 degrees one night, and that's cold. Do you think 56 degrees is cold, caller? What's your take on that?
Well, I used to live in Upper Kula on Maui. It's about 4,000 feet, so it got really cold up there.
Hmm. I'll bet.
Hey, but yeah, it has been cold, and I've only been here about 3.5 years, so I don't know if that's an norm or not. I live above Kalahale. Hey, one thing on what you were just saying, I went to that globalwitness.org, but I haven't read it yet, but, you know, corporations are owned by the stockholders, and so you got to look through the stockholders to see who owns them, but that isn't why I was calling. The reason I'm calling is about this dairy thing. Been going on, and I didn't get to listen to you guys if you've already discussed it or not, but kind of I've been trying to put out there this grass they're talking about using is such an invasive species that it's illegal in 47 out of 50 states. And
what kind of grass is it, do you know?
I think it's spelled K-I-K-U-Y-U.
Do you know how to pronounce that?
No, but I looked it up on the internet, and I've posted into the Garden Island online some comments and stuff, and it's such an invasive species that it's called a superweed or whatever noxious list it's called, and 47 states don't allow it.
And the reason why they want to use it is because it grows so fast and the cows can mow it better.
I guess so, but my thing is all businesses come to a close sooner or later, financial reasons or other reasons, and once the farm is gone, this grass is here to stay forever for all future generations on Kauai, and the only three states that allow it are Hawaii with no restrictions. California only allows it in some counties, which I'm assuming are in the desert because it can't spread. In Arizona, they don't have any restrictions, but they're all desert too. It's not going to grow there, but us, we have the lush environment, not a desert. And it's illegal in 47 states, but further, I found out, and I don't know if you have the answer to this, to control the flies, somebody mentioned somewhere, and I don't have the backing for it, I think I read it in the Garden Island in the comments possibly, that they're bringing wasps, importing wasps, that are fly-killing wasps. But I can't.
What are the flies? Where do the flies come into the picture?
Because the cows are crapping and peeing everywhere, and it doesn't wash away fast enough, so it puts a prime environment for flies.
Okay.
And so they got to do something about the flies, so they're bringing a wasp in that eats them.
Huh.
Yeah, so I could not find the name of the wasp to see if it's also, you know, not allowed in 47 out of 48 states kind of a thing, you know? Yeah.
Then what are we going to need to control the wasps?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Mongoose.
Financially, all business has come to an end, and these things are here to stay, just like the ironwood, just like the eucalyptus, just like all of these other plants that take over, you know?
What do you think about the rest of the dairy's proposed business model?
Well, I don't really know. I mean, you know, the ground is non-porous. They ride, and when they did the wind studies, they used north winds instead of trade winds, you know. So it's definitely one-sided to the public, and nobody's even mentioning about the grass or the wasp or anything. So it's all...
Well, that's new to me. That's the first time I've heard anybody bring it up. I've heard people talk about, I guess, that the milk is not going to be pasteurized on islands, going to get shipped to Oahu.
And then shipped back.
That seems kind of weird.
Yeah, I mean, there's just a lot of things pointing to a bad scene, you know.
I also heard that it's not going to be organically run, so that doesn't seem like such a great addition to the island.
Yeah, and you know, the worst thing I read about is that somehow people are saying it seems like it's kind of a done deal. They just don't want to say that. I mean, I don't understand how people can... They have to know how bad invasive species in the past have destroyed this island, and I can't believe that they would talk about bringing in a grass that's illegal in 47 states. And again, the businesses all close their doors, but those invasive species, they don't go away. You know, I hike a lot up in the Olokai Swamp, and it's full of those kahili gingers up there. They don't go away. So I just wanted to kind of put that out there. I did it once before on one of these shows, and people haven't really talked about it. I put it into the paper, and I'm hoping somebody can point me to something that says, oh, that grass is already here, or something like that, you know? So,
well, I read recently that I believe it's the Lihue Business Association is going to have a presentation about the dairy farm, the proposed dairy farm, and that's going to be coming up soon in the morning, I believe next week sometime.
In the morning while we're all at work?
Yeah. So that might be a forum where you could raise the issue again, but...
Well, that's the kind of the classic thing they do. Everybody's got to go to work, you know, so let's hold a meeting at 10 a.m. on Monday.
No, it's going to be like at 7:30, I think.
Yeah, well, I work from 7 to 3:30, so my kind of thing is just to, like, get people talking about it. You know, I'm pretty sure it's not here, but I don't know that for a fact, you know, and... You know, we have all those trees that look kind of like koa. I forget the name of them right now, that are really taking over.
You mean the albizia?
Albizias, yeah. And all sorts of things that are just really taking over the ecology of this island, and there's very little left of the cool stuff. So I hope people do start talking about that type of thing, you know? We don't need a grass here that's illegal in 47 states.
All right, well, thanks for calling in with that.
I just looked up on the Internet here this Kukuyu grass, and... they say if you want to control it, use Roundup.
Wow. On that note, let's go to the next caller.
All right. See you guys.
All right. Aloha.
Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hey. So I used to work as an intern over on the Big Island working for the USDA. And Kukuyu is already here in all the islands. I don't know in particular about the spot they're talking about where the dairy proposal is. And not that it's a great idea to introduce it into other areas, but in terms of effectively managing Kukuyu grass without spraying herbicides, pasteurization is probably one of the more effective ways if you're not going to do active reforestation, which takes a whole bunch of people to do that kind of work. And not that we shouldn't be reforesting and doing native species conservation stuff, but Kukuyu grass, just in general, through, you know, pasture management can be a really effective way of maintaining it and not spreading it.
So you're saying just, like, run, choke cows over it, and that'll take care of it?
No. I mean, because if you run too many cows at one time, you have lots of erosional issues like you would find in certain parts of mismanaged pastures you could see on the Big Island, or even more prominently in a place like Costa Rica, where they'll have like almost chiseled out staircases within the mountain slopes.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah, and that, you know, usually causes a lot of erosion. But, you know, one way to control cuckoo grass, not that I'm trying to advocate it, is to do pasteurization. It was introduced here.
What is that? What does that word mean?
Running cows or running sheep or running goats, you know, through, you know, a system of rotation, you know, so that you're rotating your cows from one, you know, area of the land to the other without overgrazing it.
I
and
see.
Abusing
okay.
It. You know, which would be effective pasture management, which I don't know what these guys are going to do. And sometimes large dairies do really bad land management practices. But, you know, some of these newer guys are into being more progressive. And I know that the USDA, through the Natural Resource Conservation Service, which I used to intern for as a college student, they're kind of trying to advocate for more of a proper, you know, cow management, pasture management. But I don't know exactly what, again, this dairy is going to do. And it definitely wouldn't be a good thing to introduce cuckoo. And in terms of, you know, taking over our native areas, it would be something that could be a problem. But if you're going to keep it contained with maybe running cattle, that's one way of, I would say, effectively doing things instead of putting, you know, shopping malls in or something like that. So, yeah, anyway, I just wanted to comment that cuckoo is here, and I'm not advocating that we should have it. And it's a good way to be controlled maybe through putting some food out there.
All right, well, thank you for that.
Okay, so you guys have a great day.
You too, a lot. Let's go to the next caller here. Aloha caller, you're on the air. Welcome to Out of the Box.
Hi, I'm not able to listen on the radio when I'm done with this call, but regarding the dairy, I understand that wasp that they're bringing in will kill the bees. This is very important.
Yeah,
there's
oftentimes unintended consequences to introducing new species.
And you remember there was a wasp that ate, I think it was the willy willy trees that were growing. There was a wasp that attacked it, and a lot of the trees, the willy willy tree, died. I know in...
I think they're extinct. I haven't seen any in Kauai in 10 years.
Yeah, well, they had wasps, and I'm not sure if it's the same wasp. I know it was a wasp, but I'm more concerned about the bees. You know, I mean, we've worked so hard to try and keep our bee population going, and... anyway, I just wanted to bring that up. Maybe somebody else can add to the conversation.
All right. Well, thank you for expressing that concern.
Okay. Aloha.
Aloha.
Yeah, I did a little research on cuckoo grass, and it says it's here.
Can you smoke it?
It doesn't look very good for that. Plus, you're not allowed to have fires anymore.
Mm.
It's illegal to have fires.
Good to know.
But it's a kind of a running grass. It got a long... kind of a vine-like stem that runs along the ground.
I guess that's probably what makes it sort of aggressive.
Yeah, they call it very aggressive. They call it one of the most important pasture and range grasses in Hawaii. So it's probably all over the place already. An aggressive and vigorous perennial that spreads by surface and underground stolons.
Stolons.
Stolons. Sounds like a...
It's a great name for a band.
Or a planet.
Huh, Planet Stolon. I like that.
So, yeah, very aggressive, but it's here already. So I don't know what the overall impact of moving it into Poipu area is. It may already be there, for that matter. Okay, let's see. You got about 20 minutes left in the show. Phone lines are open, 826-7771. So, let's see. Jonathan, you were gone for a couple of months now then. It's good to have you back in the studio.
Thanks. I feel a couple months older.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You look a little older, too.
I'm trying to dig inside myself to see if I'm also wiser.
Okay.
Yeah. I've been a little introspective, trying to, you know, reassess and try and figure out what I've learned and see if I can apply those lessons.
Yeah. So what are your plans for the future? Another office? You're going to go for county council now? Mayor? We got a mayor's race coming up there. You know, you... probably do pretty good as mayor.
Do you think?
I think so, yeah.
Why would you say that?
You just have that, you know, that kind of personality. I mean, you'd be good with, like, a whole stack of Lays around your neck, you know, and handing out awards and stuff, you know.
Yeah, I don't know if that's for me, Dave.
But, no, like, to see you stay involved here. I'm glad you made that run and you made your points on what the co-op needs to do. And,
well, you know, I offered my perspective.
Yeah. So, anyway, what else is going on in the world here then, anyway, or on the island? What are you following these days here? I've been spending a lot of time over in Big Island.
What have you been doing there?
I got a couple of projects over there. A bridge they're taking down and
some really?
Unexploded ordnance that they're removing. So I just spent a couple days a week for the last few weeks over there. So Big Island's a weird place. I don't know if I could... I mean, there's a lot to do there. It's huge.
They do call it big.
Yeah, and the Vogue is really bad right now. I mean, the whole east side there.
Well, it's not bad, Dave. It's just a situation.
Yeah, it's nothing you can do about it, right. But I couldn't live there. I mean, it's just a total haze over the landscape. You can barely see the mountains anymore.
Well, it is an active volcano that's, you know, belching vapors and gas and from the interior of the planet.
Yeah, it can't be too good to breathe that stuff all the time either. So I like it better here on Kauai.
We're up at the opposite end of the chain.
Yeah, I mean, it occasionally gets up here. But have you been following this dairy situation? Are you excited about having a dairy here on the island?
Well, the things that I have heard about it are that it's not going to be sustainably run. Are people concerned about that? That it's going to be like a more intensive management, that the scale of the operation isn't something, they're not going to be all grass-fed cows. They're going to be, will have feed as well.
Feedlot.
That doesn't sound very cool to me. I don't understand why they're not going to process the milk here on the island. It seems kooky to me to ship it to another island and process it and then ship it back. That just seems like bizarro land.
Right.
Probably it fits some kind of business model, but like, there's all kinds of stuff that seems to fit business model that doesn't make any sense otherwise. So it seems like that has a big distorting impact.
Well, all
on
the
stuff.
Other milk that's here has to be imported anyway. So, I mean, it's the same thing. They could probably do it for the same price as somebody in California shipping milk over here, I would imagine.
Yeah, but it doesn't seem like...
Are there dairies on any other islands? I don't know that I've seen another dairy. There used to be one here for that matter.
Right.
I think they've all closed.
I don't really understand the economics of it all. And I should confess, I'm not really a big cow milk drinker.
No. How about cheese? You like cheese?
I like cheese. Cheese.
You need dairy anyway. Oh, we have a caller. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Yeah. One thing that I didn't hear you guys address is when all these cows are together, which there will be, I think the report says something like 1,800 cows.
Yeah, it sounds about right.
Okay. Well, the poop is one thing, but what about the pee? And if the studies coincide with what's happening in New Zealand, is that these large areas of cattle, their pee gets into the groundwater, and then it gets leached out into the reefs and stuff like that. So I haven't heard the pee issue addressed.
All that nitrogen going into the groundwater there, it's that's not good.
You know, I've been here a long time. I was there in Moloa when we had the dairy over there, and I used to remember seeing the big jet that would shoot that green, I guess they probably, it was poop mixed with water.
Uh-huh, sounds delicious.
Onto the fields, you know. And so I'm also kind of curious, if it didn't work in Moloa, you know, if they closed up, why is it going to work in Poipu?
That's a good question.
It is a good question.
Okay. Thanks for your time.
Sure.
All right. Aloha.
Aloha. We've got another caller standing by. Aloha, caller. You're on the air.
Yeah.
You have a comment about the dairy?
Yeah. Yeah.
This has been a really great show, Dave.
I was wondering about, you know, the guys who are giving $17 million and they're going to build a dairy for Kauai. it's not the same people, the Ulupono Initiative. So you got to be wary of, okay, we give you this for $17 million with this great idea of giving milk, but what about getting the permits for the $38 multi-million on that Tupo Ridge in Hanalei?
Yeah, yeah, I guess that's
the trade-off.
I guess they're trying to sweet the deal.
All your councilmen, and you got to watch your planning department.
Yeah, I'm not really sure why. Is it Pierre Omidyar? Is that the guy's
yeah,
name?
Yeah, the eBay guy.
Yeah, I'm not really sure why he wants to do a dairy in addition to a bunch of multi-million-dollar vacation villas.
Well, that's the caveat. You know, I give you this little carrot, and you give me the permits to get up on the ridge. You know, the dairy is not going to really be profitable. Because one, you got to ship all the milk to get pasteurized off the island. It's going to cost you the same thing.
Yeah, it seems like the idea has some problems.
Ahead that he said, yeah, all that poop. Because I remember used to seeing that Moloa. It was a regurgitated shit with piss, and they spray it all over on the grass.
Yeah, caller. Caller, if you could say poo instead of what you did say, that'd be better.
Oh.
We don't want to offend any of our younger listeners.
One thing to think about, and I'm sure plenty of people are thinking about it because, you know, if the tourism is your main economic engine, and then you're going to put a dairy upwind of a big hotel like the Hyatt, you know, people aren't going to come. That was my take on it.
Yeah. All right. Hey, great. Thanks for calling. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Oh, yeah. Hi. I just wanted to respond to what you said about the willy-willy trees earlier.
Yeah.
They aren't extinct on Kauai.
Oh, really? Okay. I haven't seen one in a long time.
They are still extant. You could see them at the end of Polihale if you hike into the Haleale Valley there. Also, if you drive up the Ke Kaha Road up to Kokee. They're alongside the road right there.
Up at elevation then?
No, actually quite low before you get up higher in the drier areas. They were threatened by a wasp from Africa that was making galls on them across the state, and HDOA introduced an additional wasp that attacked the galling wasp, and that biocontrol saved our native willy-willy trees.
Oh, really?
They
oh,
are
great.
Still being attacked, but then there's this other wasp that attacks the galling wasp. So.
Okay, because there's several stands that used to be around up on the North Shore that I know are all gone, and so I hadn't seen any in years. Now, there's also the panic hedge that looks kind of like a willy-willy tree, but it's a little different, and so you still see them around, but I haven't seen a willy-willy tree in a long time.
Well, yeah, there were introduced willy-willy or other species in the genus Erythrina that were introduced that were native to other places but were grown ornamentally or as windbreaks, and they were some of the first ones to die off and were very susceptible to that galling wasp when it got here. And a lot of the native trees died as well, but fortunately the biocontrol was very effective. And has more or less saved the willy-willy tree across the state.
Oh, great. Well, maybe that's a good way of introducing insects or, you know, a good story anyway. But. Oh, hey, thanks for calling.
Yep, no problem.
Hello?
Hello, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'm going to change directions a little bit. You guys were talking about it earlier.
Can I just say thank you, caller?
Oh, thank you. Okay. Thank you very much. I'm going to be talking a little bit about income inequality and the fight to increase the minimum wage.
That's one of the two things we need to do to save the planet.
Yeah, well, you know, we got to take care of the working class, yeah? That's the 99%. That's us. And right now, one of the most important bills that's being discussed at the state legislature is increasing the minimum wage. And the Chamber of Commerce, the Hotel and Restaurants Association, and a number of politicians some who even are Democrats are fighting like hell to water it down. the chamber doesn't really care for it, and so does the...
Why do you think that is?
Well, you know, they just want to continue to make as much money as possible, but they know that it's going to happen. They know it's going to happen. And
so they just want to try and delay it happening, or what's their strategy?
The thing is that from what I understand right now, there was a hearing on Tuesday over Bill 2609, and that's a Senate bill, but it was being discussed in the House, and it was being discussed in one of the labor committees in the House. And we were pushing for 3 years to 1010, but
phasing in the raising of the minimum wage?
Yeah, raising the minimum wage in 3 years. We want to raise it to 1010 in 3 years, but there's a good possibility it just might end up being 1010, but in 4 years, you know. And what we wanted to do was to have a clause dealing with the CPI, which is the Consumer Price Index, which nobody really has, except for federal workers. Not all of them, though.
And that's just to make sure that their pay continues to have the same purchasing power.
Right. Yeah, that's right. And so whenever the cost of living goes up, it goes up as well, because in 2007, it fell back almost 20%. Yeah. There hasn't been any raise since then on the 725. So, you know, the bottom of the working class is really hurting. That would be a lot of my nieces and my daughters and their friends, you know, that are waitresses or they work in retail. I was just talking with a young man that, works over in one of the big box stores, you know, how he's working for minimum for the past few years, and they would like to see an increase, you know. And so that's what we're dealing with. They have raised the wage, Hawaii, which is on here on Kauai, and we also have Pride at Work, which is an LGBT workers' rights group. The both of us are working together on this thing to increase the minimum wage.
Teamwork, yeah.
Yeah, teamwork, right. And, you know, the thing is that we did show this movie by Robert Reich a few weeks back. We had a full house of over 60 people.
Now, he's an economist, yeah?
Yeah, he's an economist. He used to work with Clinton, you know, and he got really frustrated with Clinton's administration, you know, because he was saying that the economy and unemployment won't be solved, you know, or we won't get a handle on it until workers get paid more, you know, because in the 70s, workers' wages flattened, while the corporate executives, their pay went up over, you know, 300%. So,
right.
And so we haven't been able to keep up. And it's a rising big issue across Hawaii and across the whole continental U.S. I mean, some places are raising the minimum wage. They're fighting to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour, like in New York City.
In Seattle, yeah.
Yeah, Seattle. Yeah, well, the city of SeaTac, I don't really understand why they're calling it the city of SeaTac. Maybe it's a little town or something like that.
I think it's near the airport there.
Okay, yeah. Well, you're from Seattle, so you know. So $15 an hour, and you know, we're pretty high cost of living here in Hawaii. Everybody knows that, you know. And so, but we really have to increase this minimum wage, and so. It's going to happen, but how much we get, I don't know. Our four guys in the legislature have been pretty weak. You know, they all say they're from minimum wages, but they've been compromising a lot, like trying to extend it to 4 years instead of three. And
slowing it down, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, like, for example, Tokioka, he wants to, if the minimum wage goes up to $10, for example, he wants to have that tip credit up to $1, you know, so... Waitresses and waiters would be making, you know, $9 instead of $10.
So he wants to carve out exceptions to that rule.
Yeah, for that class, you know what I mean, and which is like a free subsidy for the employer class, you know. And since the minimum wage had raised the last time, we didn't have any big unemployment, you know. In fact, the Department of Labor here in Hawaii was saying that the, what do you call it now, more than 2%, there was an increase in the hiring. You know, and so that there wasn't no big increase in employers laying off workers. In fact, what happened was that there was an increase in hiring, you know, a couple percent, 2.1%, I believe. That's from Dwight Takamine, who works with the Department of Labor.
What about the efforts on the federal side to be
the raised? Federal side, I really, you know, I'm really confused a little bit because, you know, Obama came out and said 1010, but he was saying for federal workers, and we don't know if he's talking about everyone, you know.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of confusing and stuff. And the Democrats have been really pushing this lately because, you know, they've been losing a lot of ground, right? So they have to speak to the base, you know, they have to speak to the workers and to the very poor.
So maybe
maybe
an issue in the next election then, I guess.
Yes, it will be. And we're going to have to make it an issue, you know. And we're getting hit from all sides. We're getting hit with pesticides. The Kanaka, you know, they haven't had justice yet on many, many issues. And as working class people, which is the majority of people in Hawaii, you know, we're taking gas, you know. We're really struggling. You know, I'm retired, you know, from the state of Hawaii 22 years, but I still work part-time because I need some more money to pay bills. You know,
right.
My family and I, my wife works two jobs. She's a hotel worker and she works as a nurse's aide, you know. And my kids work in waitressing and in retail. You know, we all work. We all struggle. You know, we have to pay the bills. And, you know, we need justice on this thing, you know. And when we showed that movie in Kapaa, it was well-received. And I think I just talked to Annie Caparuccio in Small Town Coffee. We're probably going to be showing it at the end of April there when she returns from, you know, from her trip. And, you know, we're going to probably try to show it again in other areas as well. It's been shown on Maui and on Oahu.
What's the name of the film?
It's called Inequality for All. And it's put together by Robert Reich, who was a labor secretary under Clinton, you know. And he's got a lot of factual information, you know. And it's a pretty funny movie, too. And it's not really, you know, above anybody's head. He tries to explain things in terms that most people can understand. And he was also teaching over at Berkeley, you know. And he was active in the Occupy movement in Berkeley as well, you know, and in Oakland, you know.
Right.
So this man has been around, and he's got a lot of information to share, you know. And it's about time that we start standing up for working class people. You
right.
know, we're the ones who keep society running, and we got to be treated fairly.
Right. Okay, hey, thanks for calling.
Hey, thank you for giving me this opportunity to talk, okay?
All right, aloha.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Okay, well, that's about all the time we have
for today,
for the show. And we're going to go out with a song that Jonathan thought was appropriate to the conversation.
Yeah, we were talking about the dairy farm and all the cows getting together. And I just kind of wonder what might happen when all those cows get together besides, you know, having their metabolism transpire. What if they come up with a new social order? What would happen then?
Well, it doesn't seem to be playing for some reason here. But anyway, it's...
Oh, it's maybe muted.
Muted?
Yeah. Click the mute button there.
There we go.
There you go.
Okay. Well, it was a good show. Good to have you back in the studio, Jonathan. And
well, thank you, Dave.
We'll be back in a couple of weeks.
Thanks, listeners.
Here's another installment of Out of the Box. Stay tuned now for... Acoustic Luau with Marin.
Aloha.